This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
On this Tuesday, January 12th, 2021, we are happy to be with you. There is a lot to talk about today. There is a ton going on. Predominantly in football, both in the NFL and at the collegiate ranks, where we crowned a new old champion last night in Alabama yet again. There's, of course, the Wizards getting a huge win without Russell Westbrook and now getting bad news on the COVID front. The Capitals are a couple of days away from dropping the puck on their season. The Nats have been making some moves. So, Danny, ho-hum, it's mid-January, and we've got a lot to banter about in the new time slot.
Talking about a lot. How about 621 yards? How about 464 yards passing? How about 12 first-half catches and over 200 yards receiving for Devontae Smith? I mean, good Lord, this Alabama offense. It's mean what they do to people. That's not nice. That's not sporting. That 13-0 Crimson Tide team. I know this year was weird, GP, and, you know, some teams played half the games that Alabama did or otherwise, right? Just a bizarre season that stopped and started and COVID's and shut down games and everyone's mad at each other and Dabo Swinney's calling out other coaches. I don't know that there's been a better Alabama team in this sea of Alabama teams that wins a lot of national titles. That group was unbelievable, especially on offense. We're used to their offense being fine and it's like seven defensive linemen who all go pro and a couple linebackers go pro and their corners go pro. This offense was an absolute juggernaut. And they're going to score more points this year, basically, than UVA basketball has at any time under Tony Bennett. Unbelievable how good they are.
So I do think that maybe some of those Alabama teams that you referenced from years past could have beaten this one, maybe. But none of those offenses could hold a jock for this one. I mean, it's just not even close. And I don't think any of those defenses could hold this offense in check for an entire game. I'm conflicted because last night when I turned on the TV and I sat down and I started watching the game, I thought this is what I want out of my national championship game. Two programs among the Final Four every year, 31 combined first round picks since 2016 for those two teams. And if you look at, you know, any expert who covers the draft, but I'll just take Todd McShay's top 50. Last night, there were 11 of the top 50 players on the field in that game. And that's what I want in a Natty title game. We've seen that with Alabama, Clemson, similar things. You also find yourself wanting some new blood. You wanting to see something that we haven't seen because it is the same matchups, it seems like, in the playoffs and in the national championship year in and year out. But those are two schools, and you saw it last night with how well those programs acquitted themselves all season long, and then Alabama ended up exposing Ohio State a little bit. But they don't take football or sports like a lot of other schools in the country do. I mean, that's a business to them. I saw numbers this week where the Buckeyes spent over $400 million on sports this past year, and that's a record. And Alabama was top five in the country as well, and they only spent $185 million on sports this year. But watching that game, you said it. The offense for Alabama is one of the greatest college offenses ever statistically. I didn't realize until I saw. Did you know that they'd scored touchdowns on 31 of 40 drives in the first half at one point last night after they started stringing some scores together? 31 out of 40 times they touched the ball, they'd gotten touchdowns. Crazy.
What's the opposite of what the Washington football team does? It's pretty much that, right? I mean, DC's pro football team had good second halves and some numbers like that, but they couldn't figure out how to start. Alabama was the opposite of that. I mean, you mentioned parity. They've been doing this Final Four thing for 7 years, right? They've been doing it for 7 years. Started in 2014/2015. Alabama's participated in six of those seven Final Fours. The 1 year they didn't, Joe Burrow, LSU, Ed Orgeron, winning the whole damn thing, right, 2019-2020. Ohio State, I believe, has been in either four or five of them. And then it's, Clemson obviously has been in, I think, all but one as well. And then whoever the fourth team is rotated. You've had Notre Dame a couple times. You've had Michigan
Georgia's
State snuck
in
there. Georgia's been in there a couple times. I think Oklahoma as well. But basically, very little parity at the top of college football. And when you mention the amount of money, that's what's going on. They don't play by the same – I mean, they play by the same rules, but they don't play by the same limits. In pro sports, you got a salary cap. You got nothing of the sort in college football. And the rich are getting richer. And this system that was meant to include more teams, at least on paper, hasn't really at this point. But that was – that was excellence. You can't fault Alabama for playing by the rules and kicking everybody's butt.
Well, and that's where the hypocrisy for me comes in, because I can say all day long on the air with you that I would love for a Cincinnati to get more of an opportunity, or for a BYU or a Coastal Carolina to actually be in the conversation when they're ripping off wins. But then last night I watched that game and I think this is as good as it gets in college football.
Right.
This is what the country wants to see, whether it's Clemson or Ohio State that wins a week ago, that team against Alabama. And I don't know that it would have been any different, honestly, if Clemson. That's a team that has handled itself better against Nick Saban's bunch. But I just think this year the Crimson Tide were head and shoulders better than everyone else. Doesn't matter if it's Notre Dame, Ohio State, Clemson, whoever they play. Specific to last night, you mentioned some of the numbers, over 620 yards and 460 through the air, 150 on the ground. How about 37 minutes time of possession and over 10 yards per play? A couple of the individual performances that stood out to me. I want to talk DeVonta Smith with you for a second. Heisman Trophy winning wide receiver. First wideout to win the award since Desmond Howard back in the early 90s in 91, and now you know why. He didn't play after a couple minutes in the third quarter when he dislocated a finger, I think was the report. That's what it looked like anyway. But Basically in a half of football, 12 catches, 215 yards, three touchdowns. I'm not sure I've ever seen anything like that. Certainly not for a player coming in fresh off the Heisman at that position. He was uncoverable. And I know he's not big. I've seen mocks where he goes as high as 5 or 6 in that Bengals-Eagles mix. I've seen mocks where he goes as low as 21 to Jacksonville, which after last night makes no sense to me. But he's fast. He's quick. He is a precise route runner. He's got the softest hands. I mean, that guy, he doesn't look like he's ever laid a brick or he's touching a computer, like me. I mean, that guy has just hands like a baby's bottom. I don't know what his flaw is other than size. And unless a team says we're not taking him because we think he's going to get banged up in the league, how do you miss on him? He looks like he can do everything at that position.
So there, the guy that he reminds me most of, and he's faster and quicker and more stealthy than this player, but I missed on this guy. He reminds me of Peter Warrick from Florida State all those years ago, where I go, this is the quintessential college football playmaker, right? Where you can never get close to him. He, could run around in the shower, not get wet. He could dodge bullets pretty much. He's Neo on the rooftop in the Matrix. He's incredible. He is incredible. He has everything. So there's a lot that I don't know here. But I will say, I think the game has changed enough, and you can't touch these guys. You can't jam them in the same way that you used to at some of the creativity of these coaches to get these guys into the right spaces and not allow them to be touched by defenders as they get into their routes. I feel like that guy's going to be an absolute star in the league. I really do. I think the size is the only thing that can get in the way where you're worried if he takes that one shot, he may end up hurt. And last night, freak thing, his finger got jammed and it looked pretty nasty. Going up against the linebacker on a tough catch. So then he can't play. That's the only thing you kind of worry about. That's the only knock. Other than that, what are the flaws? I mean, how smooth and effortless does it look when that guy runs past people?
Special. I don't think he'll be this guy in the NFL or he'll have this career. Okay, this guy's in the Hall of Fame. He's a three-time All-Pro. He made 8 Pro Bowls. He won a Super Bowl. He's on the All-2000s team. But the guy that I think of just physically when I watch him run routes is Marvin Harrison. That's, to me, who he looks like, honestly. Maybe a little bit more burst on some of the stuff that he does, getting out to the edges. They use him a lot coming out of the backfield and using some of those designs where he's basically on a jet sweep and then goes back the direction he came from, and he's got the ball in space, and nobody can ever touch him. He is just quick enough that you can't put hands on him in a phone booth. A guy I have a hard time evaluating for Alabama is Mac Jones. I actually was texting a couple of guys who run scouting departments in the NFL about him last night while watching the game, because I'm sitting here thinking, well, damn, Mac Jones looks like a quarterback. I mean, this guy looks like someone you can definitely win with. But then I start telling myself, I think he's got a great offensive line.
The best.
He's got better weapons than any quarterback in the country. I mean, a wide receiver room where the fifth guy would be the number one guy in a lot of top 25 programs, probably. He doesn't have to really deal with adversity all that much. Having said all that, though, Danny, he makes the reads. He's really accurate. He takes shots. He stands in the pocket and makes throws while taking on contact. And you can see why he's going to end up probably going in the first round. But he is the type of quarterback that worries me. We saw it with Dwayne Haskins, who threw 50 touchdowns at Ohio State. It's just something I'm trying to now recalibrate and figure out, and I don't have a good answer for. But how do you evaluate a quarterback where everything around them is so good and elevates them so much? And I saw that all night long with Mac Jones, where he couldn't have done anything better. He threw for 460 yards and five touchdowns. But I think you got off the bus with like 393 and four. You know, and the question
right,
is,
exactly,
how much more do you create? So I don't know. Those guys kind of all said, well, you take it into account, but you still are just grading his physical tools. And it comes down to those attributes on a scouting scale, you know, the arm strength, the athleticism, the mobility, some of those types of things. He's got a terrible body as far as quarterbacks go,
yes,
kind of
does.
A chunky type dude. But I am intrigued by him. I wouldn't, if I'm a GM, I wouldn't put my reputation on the line that he's going to be a dude in the NFL. But you see what it looks like when you surround him with talent.
Yeah.
He's been arguably the best quarterback in the country this year.
Yeah, he was phenomenal. There was, again, most of the time you see it as, I mean, Justin Fields made, this is going to sound stupid, I think Justin Fields made more impressive throws over the course of the game in a blowout loss, maybe,
agreed,
than Mac Jones did, right?
Agreed.
You think of that one throw to the tight end, that one-handed catch, it was ridiculous. That ball had a six-inch window where it could be to have any chance at a completion, and that's where it was. He had a ball, I think, towards the end of the first half that he just stepped into and drove. It looked like he was just sort of flicking his wrist like a check down, but it went, probably traveled 35 yards in the air because it was headed towards the sideline on a kind of a deep out in between some defenders. And I went, wow. Again,
my favorite throw from Fields last night, see if you remember this. Hmm. It got called back. It was toward the end of the game, and it was a blowout. So I don't even know if you or anybody else was still
watching.
I may
have checked out, honestly.
He threw a back shoulder ball for a touchdown at the pylon on the near sideline with duress in the pocket, kind of moving to his left. It was a big boy National Football League throw. It was one of those kind of, wow, all right, he's got that club in the bag. And it came back because the silly goose in the end zone had the ball moving as he fell to the ground.
Oh,
but
right.
I'm telling you, he made four or five throws. You're right. You're 100% on it. Like that. I'm not saying Mac Jones was not impressive. He really, really was. And it's so funny that we're saying this because the numbers were Fields were kind of gross. I think he was 17 of 33 or something like that in the game.
Right, a week after he had the video game numbers. But the point I was going to make on Jones, yeah, absolutely. The point I was going to make on Jones is there every once in a while there are throws where you go, okay, that, and just to your point about Fields, that's an NFL thing, right? Where you go, you drop back and you're just flicking a screen or, you know, a bubble or whatever to Devontae Smith, and he's just faster than everybody. Or Jaylen Waddle, when he's right, he's better than everybody. There was a play, I think it was to Slade Bolden, and it might have been a touchdown, but he was just outside of the end zone maybe, where that looked like it was his fourth, maybe fifth look. And he was going through it. Now, in the league, you're probably knocked on your ass, and you got to do that more quickly. But that wasn't just pre-snap, the safety's there, that means I'm going there. Pre-snap, the linebacker's here, that means I'm going there, and my guy's better than your guy. That was, I started right, worked all the way to the left, and threw a dart into a limited space for what could have been a touchdown. And I think they ended up marking it at the one, and it was one of like the million touchdowns for Najee Harris, because there were so many to go around for Alabama. But that was one of those plays where I went, okay, that's a Sunday throw. That's a Sunday-type procedure. It looked kind of like, remember, before Joe Burrow got hurt against Washington, that throw that he made, probably second or third read, realized where the pressure was coming from, put it just, he couldn't have called timeout like Zach Morris and walked out there and handed it to his guy any better. It was that kind of legit throw where you go, okay, that's NFL stuff.
Fields is going top five, I would think.
Yep.
I mean, there are some mocks that have him falling out of the top five. I have a hard time believing that'll be the case after what he showed in these last couple of games. The floor, and I think this is worst-case scenario for him, would be Carolina at eight. I think if somehow he fell to eight, if Matt Rhule's sitting there and he's got Teddy Bridgewater and he's hoping for a quarterback of the future after Bridgewater, you can't let Fields get past you. But I actually think he goes to either the Jets at two or possibly the Dolphins at three. I wouldn't rule that out. Zach Wilson's going to go with one of those picks, and if the Jets decide they fall in love with him, then maybe Miami has that opportunity. The way that Fields might slide, and what you're seeing in some mocks, is that the Dolphins would take Penei Sewell, the tackle from Oregon, and would stick on the Tua train and try to see if they can get something out of him next year. Then the Falcons wouldn't go quarterback. I think they could. I think they could go Fields. The Bengals obviously won't. The Eagles clearly won't. The Lions could at seven, and the Panthers could at eight. So one way or the other, Wilson and Fields going to be off the board. Another thing I wanted to bring up from this game, I want to give props to this guy because I thought what he did was really, really admirable and impressive, but I can't tell you how uncomfortable I was that he was allowed to. Jaylen Waddle, the wide receiver for Alabama, who was considered, by the way, coming into the season by most people who evaluate college prospects for a living, the best prospect not only on Alabama's offense, but maybe the best wide receiver in the country. Not Devontae Smith, who won the Heisman Trophy. He was hurt last night. He wasn't, like, playing through some pain. He was limping, like shades of Robert Griffin against Seattle. Clearly couldn't run in a national title game. Think about how many guys opt out of these bowls because they might get drafted. Think about, heck, how many players this year, and I'm not blaming them. It was their prerogative, and some of them made the right choices. All of them, perhaps. I don't know. But how many guys opted out of the season this year because they might get drafted in COVID and the weird season? This guy is hurt, came back to try to play in the game, clearly in pregame warmups was not 100%, went anyway, and was still in the second half on and off the field, like hobbling, and nobody's just taking this guy's helmet. I don't know. It's not like he's trying to prove anything. I think he just loves his teammates. He loves football. He wants to play. So he wins some brownie points with me for that. But I could not believe someone at some point, one of the adults on the sideline, didn't just say, "Hey, buddy, you got millions of dollars coming your way. We've got this handled. We could be playing Ohio State or Bowling Green tonight. It's going to be okay with or without you. You go stand over there with our guys and do a little clapping." I just kept waiting for that conversation, and it didn't seem to take place.
Yeah, his last healthy game, he went 6 for 161 against Georgia. So he's no slouch. I mean, it's either, he's pretty terrific. And I'm with you, because here's what you can always do, right? If you're cruising, and they were, you know, I think they're up 18 at halftime, and that lead got bigger, and, you know, they're rolling, you could go, just get off your feet. And if something crazy happens, if Ohio State comes back in and we need you one more time, there's nothing to say that you had to ice right there. Just let's take some precaution. If you want to go back in the game in the fourth quarter because all of a sudden it's a one-score game and we need a first down, we'll call upon you. But other than that, I was a little, I'm with you. I was a little surprised at that. I mean, they must, again, There's this cavern that we learned, this lesson in Washington, D.C., maybe better than any city, between cleared and healthy, right? Like, I guess he was cleared, and that's all that mattered to them, but he certainly wasn't healthy, right?
I don't know who his agent is, but I would have loved to have sat next to his agent during that game.
Probably chewing the hell out of some gum, right?
He must go, like, please, God, just get him off the field. I mean, millions of dollars for that young man at stake in the draft. A mega cast was phenomenal. Put a bow on the national championship conversation real quick. I don't know how much of it you caught. Hugh Freeze of Liberty, Dave Clawson of Wake, Sam Washington of North Carolina A&T, and Gene Chizik was kind of the point guard running the whole thing, the former coach from SEC Network. Just watching those guys talk ball and go to the board and draw things up, I can't tell you how much I get out of that experience. And they're speaking a different language at times. I'm writing stuff down to go back and look up and figure out what they're talking about, so I can ask people that are smarter than me. But it's like eavesdropping on a coach's meeting, like four people sitting around watching film after a game. It's a blast. I wish they did it for more games. I know that it's an arduous thing to pull off, but I do wish that was available more often. Did you see any of it?
I did, yeah. So I flip over after touchdowns or after kind of a big play if there's a pause in the game and the like, because I don't want to miss anything when it comes to the actual live play-by-play stuff, but I'm with you. I never heard Coach Washington speak in the times I was over there, because I guess he's the
tough
only guy.
Tough for him. He was not
in the
room.
Yeah.
He was on a computer, so he would occasionally pipe in. You know, he probably talked, I would say, It was like a presidential debate where there's like 10 people on stage, and then there's that one person that you've barely heard of at the end of the stage who talks 20th of the time as the front runners.
He's like Andrew Yang with no tie on. Yeah, that's what it felt like to me. So the Wake Forest coach I liked a lot. Obviously, I like Chizik. And Hugh Freeze, I thought, was great. It's sort of so breaking good. Some of those things down. I love when they would talk about, here's how they set that up. That's my favorite kind of stuff. The things that I take for granted. Oh, that's a dumb play. That only got 2 yards. Don't do that one. And for them, they're explaining a lot of times, well, here's why you do that. You show them this look and then do something different out of that. Just complicated chess matches that go on. That's the kind of stuff I love.
We spent so much time yesterday on the football team. We'll get back into them very soon. But we didn't get a lot of time to go around the rest of the NFL. So next, our observations from Wild Card Weekend on Grant and Danny.
It is Grant and Danny. For our pals at Window Nation, these guys are the best at what they do, and here's what they're doing. They're kicking off the new year with the most popular deal to help you, yes, you, afford brand spanking new Window Nation windows. How, you might ask? You call today, and you make no payments for 2 full years. First of all, that's awesome. No payments, 2 full years. And at half price, and that's not it. Call. You get 2 free windows for every 2 you buy, and make no down payment, make no payments at all, and pay no interest for 2 full years, GP.
Yeah, in no time, you're going to be enjoying lower energy bills and the beauty and look of your home with your new windows. It is the best of both worlds, and it is Window Nation's 000 buy 2, get 2 free offer, and it is ending soon. So call 866-90-NATION or go to windownation.com today and get those 2 windows, every 2 that you buy, no limit, and 0 down payment, 0 payments, and 0% interest for 2 entire years. When you go to windownation.com or call 866-90-NATION, tell them Grant and Danny sent you.
The fact that the guys, I just think it's a very connected team. It's a team that really cares about one another. They have a real strong faith, and faith is the most powerful thing there is. Great power in faith and belief, trust. And these guys have that, so if that's part of it, then that's part of it, People, we all make our choices and we all live with our choices and stand by them. So am I upset? You ask me if I'm upset about it? No, I'm not upset. I'm looking at the Bills right now and we're moving forward. And I love our guys' heart. I love their energy. I love their spirit. I love what they're all about. I love their character. So that's the premise and the principle that I understand about these guys. So that's what we're going with.
The voice of John Harbaugh, the head coach of the Ravens, when asked if he was disappointed in his team stomping on the logo on Sunday after they beat the Titans. More on that story in that game in a moment. Welcome back, Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan. A chance after yesterday spending so much time on Washington football, and don't get us wrong, that is a priority today and every day. But we get to go back now to the weekend that was and to make some of our observations, the things we think coming out of these wild card round games. So let's start with the AFC. We'll break the games down into the 2 conferences. We'll start with the first of the 3 AFC games that was played on Saturday. The Bills survive. They advance. 27-24, they beat the Colts. Buffalo winning its first playoff game since 1995. Josh Allen, we said all week, Danny, he's going to have to play hero. I felt like that was going to be a close game, and the question was just very simply, was Allen going to make enough plays? And the answer was a resounding yes. He threw for 320 yards and a couple touchdowns. He ran for another 50 yards and a touchdown. And the Bills fan base's love affair with Stephon Diggs continues. 9 targets, 6 catches. He went for 128 and a score. The only negative, if you've got one, about the Bills coming out of this game as they finally win a playoff game and that fan base gets to take that deep sigh and breath of relief finally, is that their defense was leaky again.
Yep.
Early in the year, their defense was bad, and the thought was, well, this team can't win a championship because of this defense. And then we chronicled this. Their defense got better and better and better to the point where it became a strength at the end of the year. But the Colts rolled up 472 yards, and Phil Rivers took some shots, but he played really well, threw for 300 and a couple of scores. That gives me pause going into their matchup with Baltimore.
Colts should have won this game. I'm serious. It was back and forth, and it was anybody's game to win, obviously. But you look at how this went down. A not-too-deep field goal after a 14-play, 60-yard drive resulted, I believe it was a 42-yard missed field goal by a pretty good kicker in Blankenship. That can't happen. That's a playoff game. Turnover on downs inside a goal-to-go situation. had themselves in the red zone, marched right down the field, were going to have a lead at that point. Instead of coming away with 3 points, and that plus that missed field goal, there's your difference in the game. Or if you score a touchdown, the ball game's over. The Colts squandered two huge drives that ended up netting 0 points. That ended up being the difference in the game. This freakish, weird ending, how that whole thing went down, that was bizarre, where it looked like it was a clear fumble, but they got it back, and you know, I changed my email, she changed her email, everything was weird. But the Colts were in this game, they were a tough out. I think you said it best, when Buffalo survived in advance, no reflection on Josh Allen, he was tremendous. Stephon Diggs was outstanding as well, but that defense, which was their, I would say their Achilles heel, but maybe the chink in the armor early on in the season, kind of reared its ugly head, and the Colts were able to move the football with kind of alarming ease, I would say, and that's not the most dynamic group.
So the one thing that's a positive, I guess, if you're looking ahead to the Ravens matchup for the Bills, is they did a really good job, I thought, on run defense. You know, coming into the game, Jonathan Taylor had been just an assassin down the stretch, hired gun for Indianapolis. Amazing. And he was just putting defenses in body bags. And they shut him down about as well as you can. I mean, he got his touches, so he got some of his yards. But they didn't really let him get going. So maybe you can do something similar. I mean, there's not the risk playing the Colts of the quarterback involved in the running game. Phillip Rivers has never run forward for more than a yard without falling over. He's the anti-Lamar Jackson, if you will. He is utterly immobile. But I thought that that was good for their defense as a tune-up, so to speak, for a team in Baltimore that ran for 400 and 200 yards the last couple of weeks. But you're right about the missed chances for Indy. They'll be kicking themselves all offseason. The missed field goal. And I would even point to the final drive. Now, you referenced the play that I thought it was a fumble as well, and they should have lost the ball and the game should have ended. But after that, it's a first down around midfield. They couldn't get another first down and inexplicably kind of started going down the field rather than just getting a handful and getting to the sideline, turning some things down underneath. So I just thought they failed to execute late and really cost themselves a shot to move forward. But regardless, I guess my two takeaways would be, number one, the Bills' defense might be a problem. And number two, Josh Allen can't afford to not do that. He has no margin for error. Like, their only path to winning against these elite teams in the AFC is if Allen, who's an MVP candidate, plays like an MVP. Their next meeting is with the Ravens, so let's go to Baltimore's game against Tennessee. 20-13 final for the Ravens. They get their first playoff win in this iteration of the organization with Lamar Jackson. They've been 0-2 with him at quarterback the last couple of tries over the last couple of postseasons. Titans jumped out to a 10-0 lead. I don't know what you're thinking at that time, Danny, but Baltimore's had some problems coming back.
That's right, yeah.
Over the course of the second quarter, they did, though. Lamar Jackson, 48-yard touchdown run late in the second, tied the game at 10 apiece. I said this yesterday on the show. That run, I've only ever seen one other guy, Michael Vick, who could do that, but I would put it up there with one of the five most impressive individual plays I think I've probably watched live. Like, there just aren't
so
people
impressive
on this planet who can do that. It was insane.
Yeah, it'll make many of them, I'll tell you that. To me, the story of this game was Baltimore's defense. And I'm thinking, when Tennessee goes up 10-0, you know, if you're a Ravens fan, you're going, oh, my God, here we go again. It's this again. Here comes a steady diet of Derrick Henry, who I think the year before had like 40 yards at halftime and finished with almost 200, just thumping it downhill in the cold weather. We can't stop him. Baltimore's offseason, kind of whisper quiet, was about not letting that happen again, right? Over these last couple of years, it's kind of been building towards this with Derek Wolfe and Calais Campbell and Brandon Williams, sort of acquiring some of these guys. Patrick Queen, a great run stuffer. It was to not allow that to happen to them again. And slowly but surely, Baltimore didn't get out of its game plan on offense. Did just enough, frankly, against the pedestrian at best Tennessee defense. Was able to run it and do some of those highlight things that you touched on. But to me, the story of this game was Baltimore's defense, which allowed just a measly field goal after that first quarter. And that's how they won this football game.
Yeah, Wink Martindale's their defensive coordinator. He's interviewing for zero jobs this year. Older guy. Arthur Smith, the offensive coordinator of the Titans, deservedly, is interviewing for every single opening in the NFL right now. There are seven of them. But he got outcoached. And maybe more than accurately, the Titans' offense just got beat and out-executed by the Ravens in this game. The total yardage, 401 to 209. The Ravens ran 64 plays to Tennessee's 49. But the crazy thing is, at the end, the Titans still had a chance.
It was a
17-13 game. Baltimore led before Tucker kicked a 51-yard field goal. And that was a big-time drive where Jackson ripped off a long run and stayed in bounds. Took about 6 minutes off the clock. Nine plays, 52 yards. So then it was a touchdown game. You got to go the length of the field. Made it a lot harder. But you go the length of the field, you get your extra point. You can go to overtime. A very costly interception for Ryan Tannehill when a receiver slipped and fell. So the knock will be, well, Tannehill, because it's not one of the elite quarterbacks. You know, it was his fault, or of course he threw a pick. Whereas if that's Aaron Rodgers or one of those guys, we're pointing out that the receiver fell down. But it was, you know, it was the kind of the blueprint. You stopped Derrick Henry, who had 40 yards on 18 carries. You beat them, and that was the case. So you go Baltimore's defense. I go Lamar Jackson. I think that was – it's not because he won in the playoffs. Like, that's an overdone thing. It was Lamar Jackson's show. I mean, he ran for 136 and threw for 179. He was back at Louisville. Like, I know he did it all of last year and people are used to it, but it doesn't mean we should stop talking about it. Like, it's still insane that this guy can run for a buck 30 and throw for almost 200, and that there's, on some days, there's just no answer for him. So there's your matchup for this weekend. It's the Bills and the Ravens. The other AFC game that was played in the opening round was the Browns and the Steelers. So this game all week long was basically expected to be a bloodbath, and it was. It was just in the other direction. Pittsburgh, people didn't like a whole lot at the end of the year, but they benefited from some big-time breaks going into this game. The Browns were going to be without their head coach, Kevin Stefanski, and offensive line coach, Bill Callahan, among other assistants on the sideline. COVID restrictions. They were without one of their better offensive linemen, Joel Bitonio, their longest-tenured player, and other players. And they still win in the playoffs for the first time since 1994. You knew the Steelers were in trouble, Danny. The very first play of the game, not a bit. First snap of the game, Marquise Pouncey, a Pro Bowler, 8 feet over Ben Roethlisberger's head, all the way back to the goal line, and ends up being recovered in the end zone by Cleveland for a touchdown. Moments later, they're up 14-0, 4 minutes into the game, and they were up 28-0 by the end of the first quarter.
It's like that Seahawks-Broncos Super Bowl. Remember that? When we're like, can Seattle's defense shut down Denver's offense? First play, Peyton Manning's back there trying to corral the loose football after a bad snap. And you go, yeah, okay, that's how this game's going to go. What a gong show that was. Now, I couldn't have been more wrong about this matchup. The others I had, a decent feeling for. And I don't want to say I was right about, but, you know, I think the Tampa-Washington game, I had no clue how that would go accordingly. But I thought Pittsburgh found something. I thought Pittsburgh had found something in that comeback win against the Colts in Week 16. This is an offense that had scuffled since Washington beat their brains in, especially in that second half. They couldn't do anything against Buffalo. They lost to Cincinnati and looked gross. But they were down big against Indianapolis. In that second half, Roethlisberger started to push the ball down the field a little bit. It wasn't just, you know, quick little check down, AFC Alex Smith type stuff. And I thought that was I thought that's who they were. They found it again. They got their offense. They got their mojo back. This group is going to beat Cleveland up. Because they didn't care about Week 17. And Cleveland won that game, and Baker Mayfield, like, did some sort of dance or something like that. And I said, okay, yeah, we'll file that away. We'll win. I thought Pittsburgh would roll in this game. Couldn't have been more wrong. Could not have been more wrong. They might have come back, and it was impressive. And there were probably a couple of puckered moments there for Cleveland. But I think their comeback chance ended when Mike Tomlin, who I love normally, decided to punt on a 4th-and-1 while their comeback is happening. Just making sure that Cleveland got possession of the football back so they could go down and score, and that was the ball game to me.
Yeah, I love Mike Tomlin in spite of some of these things. I just think off the field, he is a leader of men, and he's inspirational, and he gives a good speech, and he's the kind of person that I want to surround myself with. And I love Mike Tomlin for a lot of those anecdotal things, and because also I think he's brilliant when it comes to defensive strategy and running a football team. But he doesn't quite get it. Like a lot of NFL coaches don't get it when it comes to, you want to call it analytics, that's fine, but what you should and shouldn't do in 4th-and-short at this point, and what you should and shouldn't do when you've got all the momentum and you're trying to mount a comeback. They're down 2 possessions, I think it was 12 points, and they've got a 4th-and-1, and they are rolling, and the Browns are you know, this is a heavyweight match where they're now completely staggered. I mean, you have to knock them out or you're going to lose on the cards. And you let them go back to their corner and have a seat and get some water and get their cuts worked on. I have no idea what he was thinking. He punched.
2 minutes later, touchdown. Two minutes, that's all it took.
They deserved to give up that score as far as I'm concerned. The football gods said, okay, you want to make that decision? Well, here comes more points to deal with. In the end, Ben Roethlisberger, 500 yards, 4 touchdowns, 4 picks, one of the craziest stat lines I've ever seen, because he had to throw it 68 times in the game. The thing everyone's talking about is Juju Smith-Schuster before the game saying the Browns is the Browns. He backed it up, and he got a 150-yard, 13-catch touchdown performance on his ledger. But when you say that and then you lose to a team, you're going to take some heat, and he has accordingly since the Browns eliminated Pittsburgh. Back-to-back wins in consecutive weeks for Cleveland over Pittsburgh,
right,
by the way. Of course, the Steelers sat some players and didn't try in Week 17. That backfired on them, but they are – one and done and out. And now the question is, there's some thought that Pouncey could retire. I personally think they have to move on from Roethlisberger. I just think there were too many times. He had an Alex Smith thing to him where he had some huge second halves after just being terrible in the first half of some games. But there were too many times where I was watching them this year and I thought, he is holding them back. Like, what is he doing? How is he missing this many throws?
Doesn't
he's older,
it sound crazy?
His body's worn down. I think you got to – you're not going to Mason Rudolph. I'm not saying that that's the case, but they should. That's the team that should trade for Matt Stafford or Matt Ryan or one of these veterans.
Doesn't it sound crazy, though, when you go, look, if I just give you a blind taste test, 12-3 when he played, 66% completion percentage, 3,800 yards, 33 touchdowns, quarterback rating 94.1, QBR about 61. You'd go, oh, okay, pretty good quarterback season. But I'm 100% with you. 100%. He held them back a number of times, and that offense could have been a symphony. Instead, it was up and down a little bit. It was really good at times, great at others, and pedestrian in moments. Thank you very much, Washington, by the way, for showing the blueprint, especially in that second half of their upset win when Pittsburgh was 11-0.
He'll be 39 next season, and that's not a body that, like, ages well. You know, that's a big-bodied quarterback that his 39 is not Brady's 39. His 39 might be, like, 51 or something. Like that. He's that picture of George Blanda where he looks 72.
That's
when he's
right. 53. It's black and white for some reason.
Grant and Danny on the fan. Those were your AFC games over the weekend. Looking back at the wild card round, let's get to the NFC tilts next.
Selling a home often brings up questions. Should I sell my home now or wait? Do I need to spend money on repairs? Are interest rates going to go up? What's up? Danny Rouillet recommending you get answers from the realtors I trust and refer to friends and neighbors. Sarah and Debbie Reynolds. These guys are amazing at what they do. The Reynolds team with Keller Williams Realty ranked number one by the Wall Street Journal 4 straight years. 4 years in a row, they crossed 1,000 homes sold as a team last year. That's amazing, and it tells you they know exactly what to do, and they maximize value for you. The Reynolds team are the very best to have working for you because Sarah and Debbie Reynolds will always do what's in your best interest. The Reynolds team gets their sellers 6.5% more money on average. 6.5% more. That's around $32,500 right in your pocket. Plus, Sarah and Debbie Reynolds guarantee to sell your home at 100% of your list price, or they will pay you the difference. Get the answers you need from the very best. So call the Reynolds team at 844-654-SOLD. That's 844-654-SOLD. Or visit DebbieHasTheBuyer.com.
Every game gets bigger and bigger, and the challenge gets bigger and bigger, and got a big challenge this week playing the Super Bowl champs.
The likely coach of the year, Kevin Stefanski, who got his Browns to 11 wins in his first season, just casually did something no one had been able to do in 30 years. Back in the playoffs and winning football games now with Cleveland. Welcome back, Grant and Danny, 106.7, the fan. You heard him mention that the Browns have as good a chance as anybody left to win the Super Bowl. We'll get into some of those remaining teams in a moment as we take our look at the NFC side of the ledger. I just saw on Twitter, a Major League Baseball posted this, and it got me a little pumped up. You want to know a really good way to indoctrinate yourself to your fan base and try to win some folks over? I guess in his introductory conversation, I'm not sure where this quote came from, but Kyle Schwarber just got a 1-year, $10 million contract with the Nationals. He came over from the Cubs. He's played against the Nats a couple times in the playoffs, helped the Cubs to win a World Series, once hit 38 homers in a season. So Schwarber is a former top five pick in his own right. In talking about Juan Soto, said, when you look at a guy like Juan Soto, I think he is the best hitter in the game right now. And immediately my thought was, I think Kyle Schwarber's going to fit in well here.
I like Kyle Schwarber so much. He's my favorite. That's all.
Kyle Schwarber knows how to. He knows the key to my heart, you know? Like, you bake me cookies, you bake me brownies, or you tell me that Juan Soto is the best hitter in the game. So much for me being hesitant. You know, Mr. Cub, guy that I've played in the playoffs, I have some bad memories against, you know, him hitting big home runs against the Nationals. Since he got here, he said this was the number one team he wanted to be with and that Juan Soto's the best hitter in the game. So whoever gave him his playbook to win the fan base over.
You did it.
I think it's a pretty good playbook so far. Those plays are working.
I've learned so much about wrestling just through osmosis by working with Tommy all these years that, you know, he's forgotten more this morning than I'll ever know. But it's basically the phenomenon of when you're cutting a promo, you're at the, whatever we're calling it, the Verizon Center phone booth, et cetera. And he's like, your hero is like, so today I was at Ben's Chili Bowl on my way to the Capitol. And everyone's like, yay, because it's local. That's what he just did. That's all you have to do. I now like Kyle Schwarber. Yeah. What's it called, Tommy?
It's called a cheap pop.
Yeah, it's a cheap pop. And I'm in. Because I'm sitting there going, I had a little Schwarber signing.
That's exactly what it is. Yeah. And maybe, by the way, Schwarber maybe really thinks that. Because, by the way, I agree with him. I think, you know, you can make the case. There are smart people that are doing this, that have written about this. Mike Petrello, of the analytics guy for MLB, has said that basically Juan Soto is Ted Williams of our era so far. Like, I get it. But I think it's a cheap pop. I think it's – he came out of the tunnel talking about –
that's what it is.
You know where you can get a good half smoke? And everyone's like, yeah! Tell us where.
Ben's just Chili Bowl.
Don't forget what city you're in, I guess. You know, you come out, you does anyone ever, that would be funny, Tommy, change their intro music based on the city. So, like, they come out to, like, welcome to D.C., you know, and then they come out and cut a cheap pop promo or two, just the ultimate face.
Well, I mean, maybe on you know, what we would call the local circuits. But, no, I don't think WWE will pay for the licensing for a regional song.
Right. Not going to work on that. Every single market. All right, let's get to the NFC, Danny. So two games outside of Washington and Tampa that we spent the day on yesterday. Let's start Bears-Saints. The Bears' offense is so gross.
Yep.
I wanted to wash my hands and take a shower and just let the water run all over me and let the soap drop to the ground after watching them. They had 3 points before the final play at the horn, a walk-off touchdown, 19-yard, one-handed catch by Jimmy Graham. When the game was over, it was 21-3, and then he caught the touchdown. In the game, Mitch Trubisky, with that long garbage time drive and touchdown, finished with sub-200 yards and that score. David Montgomery had 12 carries for 31 yards. So I know that the Bears' offense is terrible. It had been better over the last month. I think the Saints' defense is great. I really believe that they have a Super Bowl-worthy defense. They're a lot like the Rams, who we'll get to in a minute. But in recent years, when they get to the playoffs, high-octane offense, strong quarterbacking, big-time plays in the passing game, your throw-first team that's going to score a lot. And both of those teams now are led by their defense, and the questions become, is their offense going to be able to do enough?
It's a different game if Javon Wims, and you're probably going, who's Javon Wims again? What did he do? That's the guy that got himself kicked out, starting fisticuffs in their previous matchup with Chicago and New Orleans, were in a very tight game, headed down to the wire. That, I don't want to say cost Chicago the game, but had a hand in it, certainly. That Javon Wims had a touchdown. This was silver platter, my lord, let me hand it to you, and you can open it up. And he dropped it. It's a different game. If he catches that touchdown pass, I don't think Chicago wins the game, Grant, but it's a different game. It's a different game if that dude catches the wide-open touchdown on the trickeration play, and he dropped it. What is it you'd say you do here, Javon Wims? But, yes, I think everything your assessment about New Orleans is dead on right. We're used to them being the Drew Brees show where he's just the maestro, just orchestrating, throwing it near, medium, short, and guys are always open, and it's back shoulders, and it's rhythm, and finding what you don't do well, et cetera. This team's basically about defense and about Alvin Kamara right now. And it's an interesting recipe, but I think it's good enough to compete at a really high level. I cannot wait for the matchup this weekend against Tampa.
I'm really surprised Kamara got 23 rushes, by the way. They didn't get to 100. They did a good job against him, 99 yards. A lot of that is salting the game away. You know, you've got a pretty comfortable lead, but you've got Latavius Murray for that reason. There are other options. I wouldn't spend a lot of time just ramming him into a wall, Gibbs and Clinton Portis style. I need him to be feeling fresh and dynamic and feeling frisky come next week to make plays out of the backfield in the passing game. But yeah, Breeze is last ride, I think. It does seem like this is one last shot for him to win the Super Bowl. He has not said he's going to retire, but the feeling around him, around this team, is that this could be it. And then they've got to decide, are they really moving forward with Taysom Hill? Would they re-sign Jameis Winston and he'd be their starter? Do they get, like we talked about with Pittsburgh and so many other teams, into the market for a quarterback, which could be somewhat flooded? A last game to get into from the weekend was the NFC West game. It was actually the first of the games in the NFC on Saturday. Rams and Seahawks. John Wolford gets the start for the Rams. He gets hurt in the first quarter, taken to the hospital in an ambulance and a neck brace. His status for this week is still unknown. Jared Goff came into the game, clearly not himself. Jared Goff at his best is probably not as good as you'd like if you're Sean McVay right now in the Rams, but you wish you had that guy because, you know, he was a shell of even his usual passing self. He was 9 of 19 for a 155, but it was enough because the Rams defense is arguably the best in the NFL.
They're really good.
They've got a guy who might win a third straight Defensive Player of the Year award, and Aaron Donald, who took the game over and had multiple sacks and lived in the backfield. They've got a front that takes games over and did again. They had 5 sacks. They generated 2 takeaways, including a pick six of Russell Wilson, who was 11 for 27 in the game, completely uncomfortable. And this new-look Rams team, this is something they found at the beginning of December, really. They can run the ball. Like, Sean McVay has no problem just calling running plays all day long. 37 combined carries for Akers and Brown for a 160. He doesn't have a choice right now because Jared Goff doesn't have a hand and John Wolford was in the back of an ambulance. But they can win by running it 40 times and playing great defense against Seattle. And the better question is, can you beat Green Bay that way? And we're about to find out.
TBD. What happened to Seattle's offense? That's my question. What happened to that group that we saw the first half of the season that was unbelievable? I don't know where they went, but they disappeared.
Matchups for this weekend. I think Saturday is a better day on the ledger. Rams, Packers, and Ravens, Bills in that order, 435, 815. And then on Sunday, Browns, Chiefs, and Bucks, Saints. I actually think the two best games of the weekend are both on Saturday. I'm surprised they did it that way. Disagree with me on the quality of those games compared to the other two?
Yeah, I mean, because the worst game, at least on paper, is Kansas City, Cleveland. But, you know, the way Cleveland is playing on offense, who knows? But the NFC quarterbacks are combined like 37 years old on average. The AFC quarterbacks are 24. So it's sort of a tale of two times at this stage. My favorite game of the weekend is Tampa, New Orleans because of the backdrop, because those two old quarterbacks won last ride. But I see your point.
Ooh, okay. See, that's 3 for me, I think. But I get it. I love it. They're all going to be good, and it's as good a weekend as there is in sports. Next, let's localize this sucker. Back to the Washington football team. Their season just ended this weekend. How much does the stretch run, does what we saw from Heinicke, does the fact that Smith couldn't go affect the decision about his future at quarterback? We'll get into that next on Grant and Danny.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.